The eloquence of earnestness. Transitions to more.
I'm always the last one on the court to put my bins out Sunday night. Everyone has theirs out in the afternoon, and I'm often dragging mine down the drive at midnight. I don't know why. I suppose someone must be the last to put out their trash. Seems I volunteered to fill that role. A simple way to help assure others of their superiority, I guess. I'm often surprised by how strongly people cleave to the convention of daylight activity and nighttime retirement. I'll go grocery shopping at 3:30 a.m., and driving through the empty streets, I'm struck by how every single house is dark and the streets are completely empty. I mean, I'm literally the only person out and about. I know there are other night owls, but they hide in back rooms with the curtains drawn. They capitulate to this convention, which seems to have the weight of a law behind it. I've thought creating a legal curfew would be so easy for the authorities, if they wanted, since no one would complain. One reason us outliers and freedom junkies are necessary, not being attached to conformity, we actually use and exercise more of our rights. Totalitarian-minded authorities know it's easy to take from people the freedoms they're not using anyway, blah blah. Sorry to blow your phone up at this hour. But like I say, if people don't want me to text them at midnight, then they need to turn their damn phones off. Smile.
Exciting, I'm looking forward to hearing your perspectives. On the bin, there's more. I was typing and only now saw your other times comment, which dovetails nicely as your tale mused me. Interesting on the trash. I've a neighbor who's similar. Actually, for some reason, they leave it to the odd hours, sometimes even until pre-dawn. Funny thing though, it's never bothersome. Somewhat mysterious to me, this unusualness. I've thought about it often, every time I hear that bin. Generally, the sound itself isn't particularly pleasant. I'm not really bothered by such, but sometimes, there's a grating quality, not enjoyable. However, that lonesome depositor, at their lonely hour, has a different sound. Same bin, yet the mood, tone, and energy is different. Almost a romance to the sound. Typically it's quiet at that hour, thus the sound is enhanced, more noticeable, stands out. The expectation is for aggravated displeasure, yet, a soothing ensues. That trundling reverberates with a solitudinous independence of being, a perception of unhurried life acceptance. A soul of measure, about their task. Yet not oblivious of its consequence or effect. A respect is woven into the pace, into its precise control, yet, with an abandon from caring, from the caring of the oppression of opinion. It's not consideration which tempers that sophisticated pace, it's respect. Respect for the rightness of things, the rightness of being, of doing, unto itself, regardless. The respect of sobriety. I hear the essence of this out-of-time placer of sensibility, through that sound, for this sound is not random, not idle, not a simple consequence, but a reflection of being, a being not simple. I'd not be able to say content, no, contentment is too vain. Contained to tight. Constrained inappropriate. I cannot either say they have made peace with life, or themselves, close as that may be. Rather, there's an acceptance to that sound, to that pace, to that rhythm, but not the acceptance of surrender, never that, but the acceptance of profound realism. Perhaps I project. However, I listen. I listen with deep attention. Attunement is a skill of listening to more than sound, and through this ear, I hear more. Perhaps my interpretation is fanciful, projection, yet, extrapolation says no. Implication says no, difference says no. How am I so sure? Because we may not know what is, but we readily recognize what isn't. We have heard the sounds of bins all our lives, it's a known, familiar. We know the pattern, exquisitely, without realization of our genius. However, much like the hunter alerted by the unheard change in the jungle's cadence, undetected by an unattuned ear, so too we notice a bin traversing our sonic landscape out of pattern. We know, via contrast, such differentiation can only come from deliberation, and thus, we listen, we hear. We hear someone who is not a someone, and the music of the bin, the music of intent, soothes a knowing of the existence of a deep skill of being, and we salute that trundler of transcendence, for their timing, for their willingness to enact the unusual, without question or complaint, to do and be, however it may be. And oh, I specifically make myself available, just precisely for such communications from times and minds out of convention. I love to hear from you at any hour. Also, to appease your goodness, no worries, I don't have a phone, this is a computer number, pretending to be a phone. Thus no telephonic explosions resulted. Smile. 12:03 a.m. I have not yet heard them, my conveyor of confabulation. But, perhaps it's not them I hear, but you.
I think I'd usually consider that last remark somewhat a tray, except for the fact you so closely describe the character of my night bin hauling, I wonder the same thing. I too, am aware of how the sound stands out against the 2 or 5 a.m. silence. But I know it's futile to try being silent when all else is quiet. Trying to be quiet causes all sorts of inanimate objects to suddenly find their clearest singing voice, and what during the day you'd strain to hear at all, now has polysyllabic articulation and great dynamic range, running through diphthongs and digraphs like a Finnish phonics teacher. So, there is not constraint, so much as a resignation involved, and acceptance of physical reality such as vibration and air molecules which I didn't invent and am not responsible for. Sounds are louder at night, and not simply because of the lack of other ambient noise, but because in the silence, gas molecules are more still than they are during the day, when they are jostled and buffeted by sound waves and heat fluctuations. Also, the relative lack of bodies moving through space at night means that particulate matter like dust, stuff which helps transmit sound, has settled. So, while I am careful to not heedlessly make noise, I accept I am neither author nor editor of the laws of physics, and I expect others to be similarly aware of the fact we are all subjects in this universe, and rather than drive us apart from one another, this ought more to bring us together in solidarity and kinship. Those who may get unduly annoyed at the natural and inevitable small sounds of my nocturnal bin schlepping have a greater lesson to learn about acceptance, joyful acceptance and gratitude even, of their particular order of magnitude within the cosmic schema.
Discernment, magnificent, exquisite, particular discernment. The finesse of being articulated. We are actors, agents, willing and willful, but not unruly, serving an aesthetic encompassing a scope of sensibility sundered from the superficial. An understanding of profound responsibility and joy. Such awareness, however, despite exponential perceptions of consequence and import, contains motivations pervading our choices from origins unknown, yet, not unbidden. Despite, mostly, surpassing sobriety, logic, reason, our actions can be dictated by deeply affecting unreason, but not unreasonable. Our call of duty emanating from the peripheries of the awareness we so strive to extend, dictates of action comprehended, but not known. It's a rare journey and privilege to be so used by the universe. To be enabled of such exquisite freedom requires an impeccability of ethics unbending and resolute. Letters from the Spirit of Man.
I tend to be of the mind humans, collectively, tend to take responsibility for things they are not responsible for, while remaining unaware of other, actual responsibilities. A fine comb I'm using, and any finger pointing here includes myself, perhaps primarily. It's like we feel a certain degree of responsibility, naturally and logically, but where that burden is discharged is of secondary importance to the fact it is discharged, and we relieve ourselves of it. One of my standing lessons for myself, which I think has great general applicability and have strived to impart to others, is, we are responsible for about a tenth of what we think we are responsible for. That fraction is a loose, probably hyperbolic estimate, but it sounds about right and adds an element of surprise to the proposition, making it more memorable. But I do see this fairly often. And the non-existent nefarious social engineer takes full advantage of this proclivity, and encourages people to feel responsible for things which serve the social order in lieu of figuring out and discharging their actual personal responsibilities. So they take care to cross all their T's and dot their I's, curb their wheels and choose the low-fat option, pride themselves for their punctuality and pliability at their earth-sickening and poverty-creating careers. They concern themselves with maintaining an appearance which they believe favors them in the eyes of others, while ignoring their responsibility to be whole, unshattered, functional human beings. But as long as the need for taking responsibility is satisfied within themselves, as long as the pressure is discharged somewhere, it is enough. If they stay too busy to reflect on their inappropriate misapplication, it works, in a maladaptive way. This is all to say that we do not have a responsibility to disappear into the darkness at some hour, and sleep to forget how degrading and dehumanizing the day has been, or take pills to try to do the same, while silently staring at the ceiling in the dark, avoiding the existential question and self-soothing by mentally recapping the day, reassuring yourself that you crossed all your T's just as you were supposed to, and therefore you are blameless according to convention, no matter how fractured you may feel inside. A bit heavy-handed, perhaps, but that's my style. Connects to my idea of morality, which to be legitimate, must be self-created from personal knowledge of the world. In a nutshell, knowing what we ought to do in a particular circumstance is not difficult. For brevity, I'll assume you agree and not get into the underpinnings of that proposition. Our moral difficulties stem from the conflict between our desires and what we ought to do. Want versus should. We're generally raised being conditioned to do what we ought, which is dictated by social convention, and turn away from and squelch and ignore what we want to do. What we want, our desire, represents our personal and unique humanity, but this is given to quarter, smash and discard, cut out without anesthetic and drop the mess anywhere, just kill it, beat it to death over the course of the years. All that matters is doing what you ought according to the authoritative voices which interpret tribal law to you. Of course, this results in dysfunctional traumatized human beings who mostly glue themselves together with the bomb of social acceptance. This trade-off is always unsatisfactory. My RX is simple, although born of many years of seeking, trial and error. Thus, encourage the human to be whole, to respect and develop themselves and learn how they function by following the instruction of natural desires. After the first formative years, when they can discern what they want and what they ought, and the inherent disparity there, move toward the ought by going through the want. Get into your desire in order to develop yourself morally. This respects and celebrates the person. Instead of learning to hate oneself, one learns to love, forgive, and enjoy the self. This of course sets the foundation for loving and enjoying others and all else. The key, the surprising dynamic here is this: by following our desires rather than killing them, we allow them to develop. Like all other growing, developing things, our desires are refined in their use, through employing them. If a child desires to eat nothing but candy corn for every meal, allow it. If you deny it, it's retarded and will never develop beyond this simple selfish mistake. But if indulged, the child soon learns a valuable lesson about how they function. Less than one day of all candy corn meals will leave them green at the gills, but wiser. And they've done so on their own, in full respect of their personhood. By following our desires, we refine them. Repeatedly, we find they were not the satisfaction we thought they would be, and we adjust our wants accordingly. Over time, we find what we desire, truly desire, is moving more in line with what we truly ought. Although no one reaches perfection, if it could be reached, it wouldn't be perfection. We can realize a life in which we can do just what we want to do in all things, and it is within spitting distance of what we ought to do. This radical idea is so functional, and such an improvement over the current way, that its truth is unassailable. And this, to me, is a solid path for discovering the morality that pervades the universe. Most people still want to eat candy for dinner, figuratively speaking, because they neglected to develop their desire, and thus their humanity. Nature didn't make us all greedy little piggies for no reason, you know. There's good reason why we are ruled by desire.
Subtle, profound, intuited and implied responsibilities. Yes, known and unknown. I feel we have entered into a world of imprecision, yet truth. A most particular kind of truth, truth which cannot easily be verified or demonstrated. Truth which relies on our impeccability, depends on interpretation of our experience of reality, with those aspects of ourself which are nebulous, perhaps even tenuous, yet ultra-real. We act on these delicate sensibilities, they define us, sustain us, expand and fulfill us, yet they're difficult to articulate. It's this elucidating we are undertaking here, in our letters of conception. In this endeavor we have to stretch and extend every iota of our expressive capabilities, sparing no quarter when it comes to eloquence. We might feel eloquence to be an optional quality, but, in these letters of ours, these letters to the spirit of each other, of ourselves, we can stint no measure of eloquence, because it's the very eloquence of life we aim to express. We are an eloquence, within, down deep, our essence, our constituting self, our measure, our structure, parameters, sensibilities and sobrieties, all an eloquence. We have hidden this eloquence, even from ourselves. But, no more. I aim to hone the expression of my eloquence of being, as I have honed my very soul. I feel the time has come to fully be, to take full responsibility for our being, for that eloquence which shapes our every action, which I long for, aim for, intend, strive to apply, endeavor with all of my energies to extend to all my behavior via my every action. But I have been undone because of my failure to take full responsibility for my eloquence. As I feel, is the case with you, with most. It's the eloquence of goodness, not verbiage, which is merely a mechanism for entraining our habituation of being. I aim to shift my perceptions, cognitions, understandings, insights, discernments and more into this realm of eloquence, and perhaps thereby connect to grace. To have these connections articulate all my actions of application, the application of my real self. No more, no more any hiding or obscuring, no more. No more ameliorating. No more, or I feel the more will ever be elusive. Now onto your second sentence. I suspect we will produce a profusion before we gradually pass through the foundational aspects of this particular paradigm of interaction. These letters require much thought. Rather, consideration, in its fullest conception. Capital C consideration. I find I cannot merely respond, as the responsibility to connect and express what echoes truth throughout the fullness of my being is here, in these letters, as I regard these communications, is here of such a necessity it aches the bones of my mind. I can only tune into the finest and most exact of understandings and perceptions. My responsibility is to the truth of my knowings, not necessarily to objective truth, but truth as it applies within my person. Once expressed, once I have brought forth the true reflection of my perception, then, if luxury of time, effort and desire to resolution permits, then we might reflect and adjust accordingly the objective merits of our understandings, within the limits of probability and estimation. But, the truthful expression of our perceptual realm, of our structures of being, these we have a full freedom to extract and make available here, as it's this bringing into eternal existence which is the path to an integrated responsibility of self. This exercise of self, this extending of boundaries via the leveraging of our artistry, our creativity, our connection to the more, this expansion of self through these, I hope, regular expressions, is I feel a profound application of ever-growing self. Why always be limiting ourselves to convenient? Artistry of being is not so acquired, but takes an effort of more. We can always reduce as required by appropriateness, but, unless we maintain a regular practice of self-extension, that extension, when required by appropriateness, will be elusive. Tweaking you code. The non-existent nefarious social engineer. I feel this presence. Whether collective or individual, I don't know, but feel. A perception which leverages my responsibility of being as I see it. Which is to come to actual understanding of whatever has enveloped my attention and is pertinent and relevant in the now. To comprehend whatever has grabbed my beliefs of current importance, and I wish to apply. To adequately conceive whatever I intend as an integrated and incorporated aspect of my extended self. The consequence, my internal truth, is an acute belief in the necessity of me thinking through to the very end what presses my focus of necessary resolution. This process has to result in a resolution which my impeccability can sign off on. My connection is not here as social engineer, but rather as a coder of sorts. I feel when I come to resolution, when I sign off on the code, this act automatically inserts my efforts into the larger software of life and society, and especially adds into the evolution of understanding and perception itself. Whether I choose to do this or not is of no consequence. Completing the think-through activates this addition to the world. Or so it seems. A responsibility, but not an onus, the opposite, a joy. Not asked for or sought, not desired or taught, simply a fact of being. A fact of my being, perhaps of all, but, it's a consequential fact of my predilections. Thus I suspect such responsibilities of being are not universal across the spectrum of manifestations of self. All I can say with certainty is I feel my honest and truthful resolution of understandings actually changes the world in some small way. No matter how much I rebuke and castigate my ego, I cannot expunge this conviction, this deep truth of self, which, regardless of my motivations or agendas, when I satisfy my honesty, my integrity, my impeccability, I'm convinced the resulting understanding is inserted into the world. Whether the fruits of my efforts may or may not change the world in some minuscule way, this I do not know, but I do feel with deep conviction it's not only right to do so, but in some way necessary. If only for my own development. When I delve the layers of connectivity, I come to your non-existent nefarious social engineer, and I feel a certain obligation to contribute that little which is always enough, but never enough, to counter and constrain, to remedy and replace these societal and conceptual corruptions, wherever and however they might arise. A somewhat peculiar aspect of my existence, but one I absolutely cannot ignore or abrogate. Yet, I also don't feel any claim to significance in the least. On reflection, a more accurate representation of this knowing is the regard of my actions of comprehension as a proofreading of the code of the universe and life, or of conception in the grand abstract. My endeavors thus are not a bringing forth of new truths necessarily, but, rather of a tweaking, while a big deal for me as an individual, relatively minor to the larger whole. But, much as punctuation makes significant difference to our more mundane expressions of life, so too, do these personal resolutions of conception and understanding influence the typos of the universe. Each iteration of the universal manuscript furthers our evolution of understanding. Knowing through not knowing. We do not have a responsibility to disappear into the darkness. A most marvelous inverse expression of an understanding I share. Which doesn't imply what our actual responsibilities are, as I believe those are a pure choice, but, through this inverse understanding we come to know what they aren't, and through this reverse perspective, what we wish to choose. A bit heavy-handed, perhaps. We have entered the realm of the heavy hand. It's precisely where I wish to be. Morality, which to be legitimate, must be self-created from personal knowledge of the world. Essential. Imperative. How can morality have any legitimacy otherwise? The same applies to awareness and ethics, integrity and impeccability. To me, this grand sensibility of personal construction applies to all the core components of character, to the constituent elements of our underpinnings. Knowing what we ought to do in a particular circumstance is not difficult. It isn't. All it requires is attuning to our inner sense of rightness. What we feel is right. It's a sense, a feeling, a knowing, not a set of rules. It's thus enacted appropriateness. This sense is sadly sometimes ignored, overridden, and so diluted as to be meaningless in some. But, if we have always paid attention to it and never gone against this deep sensibility, this inner sense of right is powerful, extending way beyond morality and ethics, to the very integration into universal perspective, and thus a grand attunement to life. A most integral aspect of being and doing. One which relies on nothing more than impeccable self-honesty and a willingness to trust that inner honesty, even if it means we insist our internal sense of ought is contrary to that of the world in general. An act from independence of being many find excruciating. But, an ability we have to have if we are honest. We cannot go against ourselves no matter what. At least, from my experience, personally and from detailed observation and investigation, when we do, the results are inevitably disastrous. We cannot, we just absolutely cannot, piss on the world in any way. Ursula A. Appropriate wanting.
Yes, because there is no one right thing or way, because I am only one part playing into something larger that's connected to even larger processes. But there's what's right for me, that's my piece, and what I want to do.
Our moral difficulties stem from the conflict between our desires and what we ought to do. Want versus should. Typically manifesting as short-term versus longer-term, immediate context versus broad context, limited, narrow or immersed awareness versus expanded awareness. We want inappropriately thus. Smile. We're generally raised being conditioned to do what we ought to, which is dictated by social convention. The horror and insidious slavery of should. A nasty villain of corruption and manipulation, often subverting goodness against itself. What we want, our desire, represents our personal and unique humanity. For good people, internally good, following what we want is a fantastic guide, as good people cannot want what is bad, they just cannot. But they have to overcome their conditioning to do so. Get into your desire in order to develop yourself morally. We can especially observe the genius of this mechanism via sexuality. Like all other growing, developing things, our desires are refined in their use, through employing them. We cannot assume starts are endings. And he has done so on his own, in full respect of his personhood. Enabling the mechanisms of learning and decision-making to develop, as opposed to blind obedience which makes for mind-numbing lack of development. Making sure the why and how is understood, as opposed to taking someone's word for it. Only one instance when that authority turns out to be wrong or mistaken, and the entire edifice collapses. Or will if sensibility prevails. Over time, we find what we desire, truly desire, is moving more in line with what we truly ought. The natural progression of awareness, enabling more and more appropriateness. When ought and want are aligned, we are, to me, attuned, and when attuned, indeed, life is easy. This radical idea is so functional, and such an improvement over the current way, that its truth is unassailable. Indeed, it's exactly the coming to these unassailable truths which I see as coming to resolution and which I feel makes such a vital difference to the world. And this, to me, is a solid path for discovering the morality which pervades the universe. A most appropriate path, as in following what we deem to be appropriate, we continually extend and refine our understanding of what is appropriate for us, and thus develop not only our morality, but our ethics and impeccability, and even our nobleness. Nature didn't make us all greedy little piggies for no reason, you know. There's good reason why we are ruled by desire. It's only imbalance which really is the source for the greed, or inappropriateness, which is of course, lack of awareness. Artistry of being. Earnestness, the eloquence of earnestness. This I feel is an appropriate encapsulation of what we are about, in what I regard as these letters. When our missives took days or even weeks to arrive and for responses to return, our care of expression was magnified, along with the resulting articulation. I intend to apply that same care and forethought to my electronic communications. My letters in a bottle thus, as this imagined delivery method implies no expectations and thus no obligations, as well as disconnecting from the tyranny of time pressure. We get to choose when we wish to stroll down to the beach,